This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 342, Oculus View Source. Hello and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, one of your family of co-hosts. Delighted to be joined yet again with my friend and co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Michael. Welcome back.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy your time on the Autobahn last week?
I probably should have, but I'll tell you that the Highway 95 through Virginia is patrolled pretty aggressively. So,
oh yes, it is. I've driven that road many times.
I didn't enjoy it too much. I was operating within the confines of the law, right?
Well, at one point in time, like shortly after I got my new car years ago, I did go to three digits on that road at one point.
Yeah, well, you know, with all those
nooks and crannies. Now I would not even do it.
No. All those nooks and crannies, you don't want to do it.
Nope.
Well, we've got a show here for everybody, and let's get straight to it, because the news from this week has been nothing short of hilarious. So we'll open it up.
Hilarious.
We'll open it up with a little tidbit here about a governor making some wild and outrageous claims about hacking and all this kind of decoding and cracking and whatever kind of work here. Did you know, Michael, that if you do a view source, that you are doing criminal hacking on a web page?
Yeah, when I saw this article, it just continued to show to me the total lack of understanding of technology by many people, right? matter of fact, I'm doing a lot of work lately with APIs. Mm-hmm. And one of the great ways to uncover APIs is not only view source, but also to turn on debug tools on your web browser.
So you can fix things,
so
right?
So I would be an uber hacker in this guy's mindset, because I actually looked at the messages, not just the code. So yeah, this is sad. Sad. And what gets me about it is it shows that technology literacy is something that we need to teach, not just to kids, not just to students, not just to new employees, but all the way up and down the age stack, I will call it, because more and more of our day-to-day lives are driven by technology. And if you don't have a basic understanding, how can you actually legislate things related to that technology? Or at least have a trusted source you can go to who can explain to you that view source does not equal hacking. It's public knowledge.
Yes. But if your frame of reference is a series of tubes, I can understand why you come to this conclusion, right?
Now, so now I've got to pick on that one, because a series of tubes, for those who don't remember, the U.S. legislator some years ago who said the internet is a series of tubes. If you're trying to make a metaphorical comparison to data flowing from one area to another, and you come from a state that does a lot of oil work, which has tubes that transfer content from one area to another, I can almost understand using that as a reference point, right? At least there's some logic in that.
Okay. We can certainly go there. I wasn't expecting you to rise to the defense, but I understand your point.
You know, that is not the person I would rise to the defense of, but I can understand the logic compared to looking at publicly available things as hacking. That would be like going to the library is espionage.
Because you're opening up a book and taking knowledge and then potentially using it.
Yes.
Yes. Acquiring knowledge.
Acquiring knowledge is evil.
Oh my. So our next article is all about acquiring knowledge too. So this particular one was one actually I saw from a tweet from our friend Epred. We got another one from him later on too, that Accenture has acquired not just knowledge, but 60,000 Oculus Quest 2 headsets.
Yes.
So our friend Andy, if they were Andes, they would be 60,000 Andes worth of Oculus.
But there are 60,000 Andes.
There could be. There could be infinite Andes.
Yes, in the multiverse.
In the multiverse. So this is actually pretty exciting. According to the article, this is the largest single purchase of such headsets ever. This is really saying that it's a big deal for Accenture to really put energy behind the efforts for virtual reality type of education, training, new client and new consultant acquisition, onboarding, et cetera, and it is a potentially watershed moment. What I wonder, though, is if, and it must be the case, that Accenture is also going to have to then manage the deployment of 60,000 Facebook IDs.
That's where I was going to go. It's really great to see enterprise deployment of VR, right?
Yep.
Not just, you know, being used by small engineering teams to do some 3D modeling and joint development of, you know, components in a vehicle. But right. This is training of employees across the enterprise. So that's a very different skill set. It's a very different deployment model. And yes, Oculus Quest 2 requires a Facebook account. So does this mean that Facebook is now, and I'm trying to remember if there was a story about this, enabling Facebook for the enterprise, where you have your own, you know, enterprise firewalled domain that is separate from Facebook proper. Google did that years ago, right, with, you know, deployments of the Google stack that you could get for, you know, having, what is it, sheets and presentations, et cetera,
and email. Yeah, certainly did it for education and learned how to do it through education spaces, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this would be an interesting growth business for Facebook. It also, if you think about with what's going on in the news lately around the tech backlash and the wanting to legislate things and Facebook coming forward and saying, please legislate us, right? It would, again, imply the desire to start building these firewalled areas that could be trusted for an enterprise. Because if I'm doing training of my consultants, we may have a special practice that we use to ensure a level of consistency across our customer delivery experience. And so I don't want that to leak out and potentially be copied by another consulting firm. If that's on Facebook proper, that would scare the crap out of me, right? So there has to be some kind of enterprise Facebook model that ties with this. Otherwise, you know, it's a great experiment, but I worry. Because I can also see, in this exact same thing, the reason you do this is I want to do that training. I have a distributed workforce. And like, you know, the paper that I wrote, 2008, about virtual co-location.
Mm-hmm.
Oculus Quest 2 would give you that ability to do those training sessions where everybody's virtually, you know, physically elsewhere, but virtually in the same classroom, having the same experience and interacting with each other with 6 degrees of freedom.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Michael. And I remember your paper on this, and it is, you know, a way of looking into the future, right? So you were predicting moments like this. And my issue around it, too, is very similar about the security and the privacy of the content and what transpires, right? So you have to imagine that Accenture has got some very specific intellectual property and the like that will, whether it's used for education or whether it's used for virtual co-location, you know, for conferences and other things, that the content that is transmitted if it's going through third-party servers, one would have to believe that there was a lot of discussion around how that content will be segmented, protected, etc. And for Facebook to be able to do this in a repeatable way, like you just said, requires that enterprise notion to come to the surface too. So we're going to stay tuned to this because
yes,
this is kind of what we talk about and one of the
games,
major things
at work.
Games at work for work purposes and using those dynamics very productively. So tip of the hat to both of these entities. This is a brave new foray going into the future, and it's not small potatoes with 60,000 units to begin with. Now, moving to something that's talking about a bit fewer units in total, it's not 60,000. There was an article that came across my radar dealing with Waymo, which is Google's division for autonomous vehicles. Thank you, Michael, for the visual.
The visual.
The international signal for autonomous vehicles is to move the steering wheel as you're driving it.
Virtually.
And the cool thing, well, maybe not the cool thing is that there have been some people in San Francisco who've been noticing, not just one. You know, we've had actually cars coming through our neighborhood not too long ago about, you know, looking, recording the roads, improving the maps, etc. Not just one, but lots, like fleets, like swarms of cars. And it wasn't for map purposes, apparently. This was for augmented, autonomous driving purposes. And I have to believe that if I were in one of those houses in San Francisco on one of those curvy, bendy streets on one of those hills, and at whatever time in the day or night these things would come through, that would seem, gosh, here in October Halloween month, a little eerie, a little scary, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah, I tried to access the article, and it's behind a firewall or a paywall, so I could not access it. But the gist is covered in the first couple of paragraphs for me, and I agree. Given the lack of standards or regulatory requirements around self-driving vehicles, enterprises like Waymo and others need to build out a knowledge corpus that they can train against and that they can then validate. And part of that training and validating, drive it on the road, maybe have a second drive, have a backup engineer in the vehicle, also collect the data of the roads, which I always find interesting because the data of the road is constantly changing. Even if you live in a temperate environment with basic roads, it changes because there are things called people, and they walk on the road, or animals, or somebody puts their garbage can out, right, and doesn't put it on the curb correctly, or you know, any number of things. So how do you build that corpus of knowledge of the roads, both as a baseline, as well as how do you react to it in real time by actually testing vehicles on those roads, right? So I can see this being somewhat worrisome for people, but I can also, just because I love the idea of self-driving vehicles, I find it exciting and interesting at the same time.
Yeah, so two further thoughts. So thought number one is, this article continued by saying how these flocking cars were also hitting into dead-end streets because
those flocking cars.
Well, that's what they're calling them. San Francisco traffic policy called slow streets, meaning to divert cars from some roads to make them a little more open for pedestrians, cyclists, others. And that was the Waymo cars going and following that same designation that was this case in San Francisco.
Do they just pile up at the end of a cul-de-sac? There's like 30 cars.
Well, they're going to a junction when you could only go east and west, and ahead was a dead end. So you had to go into the dead end, make a U-turn, and then go back out again. So there are a number of driving games on Apple Arcade and others that I've been playing, and I can see how that would work because that's part of the dynamic of the game, hence games at work, friends, you know. So that was kind of neat. But to your other point of, hey, this article was behind a paywall, so I didn't see much more of it. Well, interesting point. You and I, Michael, get a lot of our news stories served up to us via Apple News. right?
Yes.
I mean, it's not exclusive. Right? We get tweets and we get other stories and other things coming in from friends and family and everyone else. So thank you, all of you. But here's the big old but. In Apple News, you might read the article, but if you share via Safari, you're now
exposed. You lose that. Yep.
And you lose the entirety of the article, and the monetization of the page then kicks in.
Yeah. And you know, the great thing about Apple News, at least as a Apple News subscriber, is you get access to paid content. And as a provider of that content, you get access to any click through on that article. You're going to get the little ticky mark that accumulates up to pennies, right? Mm-hmm. Ultimately dollars, etc., or whatever your local currency is. And it exposes your content from behind the paywall to more people who are paying for it, but don't want to buy a subscription to your magazine or your online website. So there's pluses and minuses. I figured this one came from Apple News, but as part of reading it from our content perspective as we prep the show, et cetera, we all try to look at it in Safari or Firefox or Chrome. Pick your favorite browser, Edge. And as such, that's a warning. This article, which highly recommend you actually go read it. You may find it easier through either a paid subscription or through Apple News. Otherwise, you'll get a nice headline article.
Yeah, and we do strive to share everything we're sharing in a way that anyone can access from any device, and not
exactly
everyone has Apple News on their device. I can't imagine why, but that's the case. So there you go. All right.
I use Oppo News because I only buy Oppo phones.
Well, Michael, this next one is a very Apple-centric article,
yes.
Tidbits, and one that you found dealing with two-factor authentication. You want to kind of set it up here for our audience?
Yeah, it's just we do have a lot of Apple listeners and
co-hosts.
And co-hosts. In iOS 15, Apple has really tried to make it easier for you to enable two-factor authentication responses through their keychain capabilities of capturing your passwords and sharing them across your devices. But what usually happens is you get to a second factor and it breaks.
Right.
So this article from the guys over at Tidbits will walk you through how to set that up so you can enable auto resolution of two-factor passwords or two-factor logins using the app itself or keychain itself. There's a similar procedure if you use 1Password where you can enable what are called TOTP passwords, second factors, which I believe are, they use a number generator and there's a generated code periodically based off of a timer. I know Microsoft has an authenticator that does this. If you're into games, Blizzard does this. There's lots of different ways of doing this. And the reason I call it out, and we've talked about this before on the show, is using an SMS for a second factor is not very secure,
right?
Because of cell phone spoofing, right? I can get your second factor that way.
Yep.
So having some kind of an authenticator, whether it's an Authy or Google Authenticator or whatever, with these capabilities, you can now build that into your device. Now, at the same time, remember, you are now setting up your device to be its own second factor. So you really must trust your device that you're using this on, because if someone gets the device and can log in on it, so that means put a very secure login, then they have access to everything.
Yeah, and by everything, we mean
everything. Everything. Yeah, and it's funny because I've been trying to upskill my parents to use a password vault and to change from, oh, we make our passwords easy to remember, to we don't remember any of our passwords, which is the correct answer,
yep,
except for the one that logs into your vault. Everything else should be just total gobbledygook that you can never remember, because if you can never remember it, it's probably not in a dictionary attack. It's probably not guessable. It's probably not tied to some social media stuff that you've already published 1,000 times out there that can easily be sniffed.
Yeah, exactly. And you're precisely right, Michael, that it's an important security element to begin with. And this takes it to another level. So I'm going to study this a little bit more and understand it a little bit better. I love the idea of the QR code being presented to then, you know, kind of reflect then back again. I need that. Mm-hmm. And I need to be able to articulate the QR code response. And that's a better challenge than what could be spoofed.
Yes.
All right. Switching gears just a little bit. We've talked about this company, I don't know, once or twice.
I think you and I were both huge fans of them at the very early times of this podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When they were US Robotics, you know.
Oh, even then. Yeah.
Yeah, even then. So Palm is saying, hey, we've been busy. There's stuff coming up. We're excited. And the article from Gizmodo that we read about is, the answer is earbuds.
Probably, yeah.
Probably.
Well, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they released the Palm Phone. Mm-hmm. The tiny Palm Phone, which I don't remember really anyone getting one of these.
Nope.
And I was a huge fan of Palm. I even had the IBM branded version of one of the Palm devices, the famous WorkPad.
Yep.
I had their Trios, which were, I thought, pretty much the top of the line smartphone.
At the time,
right? Matter of fact, my Trio was better than the first iPhone because I had 3G on it and the iPhone didn't when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
I just made the mistake of upgrading to the Windows Phone version, which was bad. Really, really bad. I think I still have it somewhere in the attic. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, getting into earbuds, okay. Let's see what they do. Could be interesting.
Could be. Could be you can do graffiti in your ear while you're listening.
Tabity, 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 tabity.
Who knows, right? Well, this next article is definitely one that has your name all over it.
Oh, yes.
How does one optimize Windows 11 for gaming, Michael?
Start by backing down to Windows 10. No. So every time Windows puts out a new upgrade from Windows XP to, you know, 8, 7, 9, 10, whatever,
right.
They're constantly increasing the eye candy. And the number one thing that you do to optimize your Windows machine for gaming is turn off all the eye candy, right? Because that's stress to the graphics subsystem. And so this article really goes through things you need to look at, things that you need to change if you've upgraded to Windows 11. And there's another article, and I thought I had thrown it into the show notes, and I evidently didn't, talking about how people with an AMD processor, Windows 10 hits like, going from 10 to 11 is like a 10 or 11% performance drop.
Ouch.
Just at the processor level. I assume that will be resolved just because of the number of people with AMD-based chips who are running Windows, who are using their latest and greatest chip. Right, mm-hmm. You should not have this massive degradation of your experience. I think that's a time-based thing. It will be resolved. But this is interesting. You know, to how do you tune your environment? It's interesting to me. There are two reasons, soon to be three, that I have a Windows gaming rig. One is to play some of my older games.
Like Diablo? Right?
Well, that would be reason three, and we'll come back to that second. Two is for Flight Simulator, Microsoft Flight Simulator,
but that's one awesome. Of your games under option one, isn't it?
No, this is not older. That's it's only newer. A year old.
Okay.
And
okay.
They keep putting out more content. But in that one, software's hard, evidently, because every release of Windows 11 broke the installer for Flight Simulator.
Wait. And remind me again, that what was the name of the company that makes Flight Simulator?
Oh, yeah. It's Mickey Mouse? No.
and what was the name of the company that makes Windows?
Gatesville?
Okay, I was just checking. I was trying to remember.
No, but it's every time I got a new build of Windows 11, and I was on the preview builds, I would, you know, then try to get into Flight Simulator, and it would go, oh, there's a mandatory update. Go do the update. So it's like, fine, no problem. That's great.
That's what you do.
Go do the update. It says, no update available.
Oh.
Or you try to do the update, and it just fails. Oh. And so the way I resolved it most times was uninstall Flight Simulator, restall it new. But it's 135 gigabyte download.
So basically, gigabyte, it's not instantaneous. Megabyte.
No. Finally, the most recent time it died, I found a blog, not a blog post, but a support post in the Microsoft community forums, where it was like, rename this one cache directory, start it, shut it down, rename it back. And that solved whatever installer problem that they had.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and then reason number three, Diablo.
Which is Diablo a new game. 2.
Yes, the new resurrected version of Diablo 2 is out. I haven't bought it yet.
But you're gonna.
I just haven't had time to play it. But we're gonna. Because Diablo.
Well, I have to talk to Andy because it does run on the Switch.
And really?
Maybe I should just get it for the Switch. Yeah, it does run on the Switch. So I have a Nintendo Switch. And I just don't know if the gaming experience would be the same, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe with a Bluetooth keyboard running it on the TV. I don't know.
Because that's the game, man.
It is the game. It's the game.
Now, the interesting thing, I was listening to a podcast that talked about it, and they basically said it didn't age well. Because there's a lot of grinding. And I hate grinding, but I love Diablo 2. And if you think about it, it really is nothing but grinding.
It is, but there are separate locations and you evolve the storyline. And it wasn't just, oh, go out and go kill a bunch of random monsters of this kind.
Right. Go out and kill a bunch of random monsters.
in the service of this particular space. Quest.
Yes.
Right? Or, you know, a certain thing. So.
Well, I know we're running out of time. Did find something interesting. Back in the day, one of the games that people just went nutso about was EVE Online.
Yep.
And I never got to play it. Me either. I just didn't have time. Found an article over at iMore this week on how to get it to run on the Mac now. And this is something I may need to try out.
Yeah, this was a really quite a fantastic experience back in the day, back in the virtual universe time frame. So, yeah, well, I mean, before when it was only on Windows, it wasn't helpful for me, but maybe this is something worth giving a try. Well, we'll see. Michael, you found a little bit of a sad posting, although at 111... but how can you be sad about someone passing?
Hey, that's my target. 111, 115. Shoot, yeah.
Something like that.
Huge Disney fan. One of the really early Disney artists by the name of Ruthie Thompson passed away recently. And just to go back, she was one of the artists in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Very cool.
So talk about a legacy of animation and innovation, right? I was actually watching a show recently talking through some of the things that are going on across the Disney parks recently. And they used time to talk about how Disney World in Florida was created the innovations that went into that, et cetera. And it just got me thinking. Then I saw this article. And, you know, we look at the innovation, the change of technology, and just in the course of the run of this show and its predecessor, things have changed so dramatically. Can you imagine, you know, when you and I are doing episode at 110, 111 years old,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Going, looking back and saying, yeah, remember when people used to. But I just thought
we don't
cool.
do that today.
No. Yeah, remember 10 years ago when we did that. So anyway, just something I thought it was interesting. It ties to tech just because of the advancement of tech that's happened within animation. I thought that was very interesting.
Cool. So rounding out the show, and I do mean rounding, we have another post here from Ian, who shared with us a Kickstarter dealing with a glow-in-the-dark, actually not glow-in-the-dark, it is a light-up-in-the-dark Frisbee Golf disc. And it's not just any old disc.
No.
It is a full training experience where it has Bluetooth connectivity to your cell phone. You can look at it in multiple axes. It looked very Tron-esque to me.
When I saw this, it was like, Disney's going to sue them because they're doing Tron, right? There's a whole bit in the video. They're lit up. It's at night. They've got, you know, glow sticks on their heads and chest. They kind of look like the characters in Tron. And they're throwing the spinning discs at each other, the light discs from Tron. Yeah.
But yeah,
cool. It's cool looking. I don't know if I want to pay $65 or $64.90 whatever cents for a Frisbee.
Yeah, but nearly 2,500 people said, yaha.
Yaha.
So, yeah, that's a bit much. I remember I had a Frisbee disc, not a golf disc, but a Frisbee. It was a XDR 50 milligram one that I played with Ultimate.
You wanted the weight. You wanted the weight, right?
Well,
to really get it going.
And it had a layer around the outside rim, which made it really good for Ultimate. So you could really grasp it, throw it hard, mm-hmm. whichever way. So I never much got into Frisbee golf, but I did play a lot of Ultimate. And in our case, we played Ultimate amongst the trees, which made it really interesting. Because if you didn't know a tree was coming up and you're going long, the Frisbee might keep going, but you kind of stopped on the bark.
Well, I just can't imagine, right? You know, this is a Frisbee with 240 LED lights on it. And, you know, they're showing some examples of like tossing it between trees. I want to know, when you really spin this thing and throw it, how good is it really when it hits that tree? And
you know, an LED probably is okay, right? It probably is okay. Now, the battery pack, the chips, and the solders... that probably is not so hot, but I'll bet you the lights are fine.
Yeah. Well, they are showing examples of throwing it into a column.
Yeah. Yep. Or into a net, which is substantially less hard than bark.
Yes.
All right. Well, with that, if you want to bark up the wrong tree, drop us a line. Let us know. Tell us what you're seeing and hearing and thinking about. Don't wait till we're 111 apiece here, guys, you know, because, you know, that's a while out. So time travel back. Tell us what you're thinking about, what you're seeing, and it might show up on the next edition of GamesAtWork.biz. Bye. See ya.
Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.